Good morning, Doreen. Thank you for coming on the line.
Good morning, Marlene. It's nice to be here.
So you are one of the Interlakes accomplished writers and is now working on your fourth book called Chocolatour, Your Passport to Chocolate Culture of the World. Can you tell us what the book is about and where have you been so far to do your research for the book?
Sure, thank you very much. I started my research in Europe because I think everybody thinks about Belgium, France, Switzerland, Holland, and Italy and Spain as well as being the top chocolate countries. So for 2009 and 2010, I did those six European countries. And then in 2010, I went to London because there's been a chocolate revolution in the UK, and they've got amazing chocolate. So the first edition of my book, which will be out towards the end of the year, will focus on Europe and the UK. But I just came back from Peru and Ecuador because I have a chapter in my book about growing cacao and how the ugly goop inside the cacao pod becomes the luxurious chocolate we've all come to know and love.
So what was it like when you were in Peru and Ecuador? Tell us about your travels. What challenges did you face?
Well, that was a really challenging trip because, I'm fortunate as a travel writer, I often get to stay in very luxurious hotels and whatnot, but this trip was very down to basics because in Peru, we stayed with cacao growers right on their cacao plantation. And so we participated in the harvest. We went to pick the cocoa pods off the cocoa trees. We learned how they slash them open with the big machetes and how they scoop out they call it the placenta. It's like a white goop that encases the cocoa beans in their raw state. And then they clean that off the beans, and it goes into large pails that they then carry by wheelbarrow back to their headquarters, which is just a very basic series of wooden sheds. And they ferment the beans in those wooden crates. Each day they lower them to another set of crates, and for 2 days in each level, the beans are dried naturally. And if, they get a lot of rain, first of all, they are drying them in the sun, and then if they get a lot of rain, they have to quickly get them out of the rain because rot is a big issue with cocoa beans. So we learned all about that process. I'll get into detail in it in my book, but that was very intriguing. And then in Ecuador, we went to a cacao plantation that's actually run by a woman from Ontario who moved to Ecuador and is now growing cacao. So we learned her challenges, and they're facing a great degree of blight right now, and a lot of the cacao pods are not even ripening. They're going black. Like we see blight on potatoes, they're going black, and they have to completely destroy them. And that blight is being transported by ants. So there's a lot of ants in Ecuador and Peru as well, and that seems to be contributing to the problem. So it's a big issue on the challenges that they're facing, and I think that chocolate prices are going to continue to skyrocket.
So in your travels, because you were in the jungles, and I'm sure quite different than what we experience here in the Interlake, do you have some memories of events that maybe were a little bit unsettling for you or even frightening?
Yes, we were in a mudslide. We were in a mudslide in Peru, and that closed the highway down for 8 hours, and we just had to wait until they brought in great big bulldozers and dump trucks and everything to get the mud off the road. And we were in the middle of nowhere. There were no bathrooms and no facilities of any kind, except some very entrepreneurial Peruvians who were quickly selling water by the road and, fruit and even some food and whatnot. But that was one interesting experience, and then another was with respect to bugs. Boy, do they have bugs in the Amazon jungle. And when we were in Peru, I did get very severely bitten by the no-see-ums, and my legs were completely covered in red spots. And we had all our travel shots and everything, but after being out in the jungle, we'd showered and we went and had our supper outside, and I had sprayed myself quite well with bug stuff, but it wasn't enough, and I just got bit like crazy. So that was another experience. And as well, when we were in Ecuador, we were sleeping in this jungle lodge where they had mosquito netting over us. And I woke up in the morning, and there was a very large spider on the inside of the mosquito netting. So that was kind of scary because I had to get out the other side of the bed, and then I got out and squashed him from outside the net because I didn't want to do it from inside in case I missed and he started crawling towards me. So, boy, there was definitely some insect-related experiences that I'd like to forget.
So it sounds like you had a very exciting adventure. Now, you traveled with another woman who had some connections in those locations. What was it like to be two Canadian women traveling in a country that was quite different than ours?
Well, I was fortunate. I traveled with a fellow writer. She's from Ontario, and she writes in the mining industry. So she had actually been to Peru before on a mining assignment, so that was handy. And her husband is a geologist and has a lot of information about Peru because he goes to work there quite often. So that was helpful. And then in planning our Ecuadorian travels, I had hooked up online with a chocolate maker from the States who now lives in Quito, married an Ecuadorian woman, and their family had a little suite that they rented us for only $20 per night per person. So that was excellent because we had full cooking facilities in our suite and, you know, our own bathroom and everything. So that was nice. It really helps when you can have contacts, you know, from within that country. And in Peru, I'd hooked up with a woman who works for a chocolate company, and she helped organize our visit with the farmers. And then with our time in Lima, I hooked up with another chocolatier, and she used to be a chef and took us to all the most wonderful Peruvian restaurants. So I really recommend to anyone who loves the culinary scene, you know, really enjoys good cuisine, Peru and Lima is really the place to go.
All right. Now, the chocolate makers and retailers in Belgium and France and London, do they use the cocoa that is produced in Peru and Ecuador? Or are they getting it from other countries?
Well, it's a mixed bag. You see, cocoa is grown 20 degrees north and south of the equator. So a whole belt right around the world, there's cocoa being grown in different places. And Africa grows the greatest amount of cocoa, but it's usually of a lesser quality, except for Madagascar, off the coast of Africa, which does produce really excellent chocolate. So when I was in Europe, and I started my research for this book back in 2009, and at that time, I didn't know nearly as much as I do now. So when I was in Belgium and France and Switzerland, whatever, I really wasn't focusing as much on the origin of where their chocolate was coming from as I was on what they were producing and what their inspiration was. And I know that a lot of those chocolate makers in Europe get their couverture, which is already a blended chocolate used in the preparation of bonbons and chocolate bars. They were getting those from different suppliers around the world. So I think some of them weren't even entirely aware of where the origin of their chocolate was, you know. And so a recommendation I have to people that really want to understand chocolate and eat the finest chocolate is look for single origin chocolates, whether they be bonbons or truffles or whether they are bars. Nowadays, you can find on the label the exact origin of the chocolate. And if it comes from one specific place, and yes, South America has absolutely exquisite chocolate, you know you're going to be eating a really great product.
So to learn a lot about chocolate, they must also buy your book that's going to be published in the future. And so what are the next steps now that you've done the research? What will happen next?
Well, I'm going to start in earnest writing this book and hopefully get it done by the end of the summer, and then I'm likely going to self-publish it myself. I have been entertaining some other options, but this is my fourth book, and I really kind of want to retain artistic control on it, so I am planning to self-publish, and that will mean that the e-book would be available likely in the fall, like maybe October, and the printed version would be available in time for Christmas shopping. So I think if the listeners stay tuned to my blog, which is wizardofwords.net, they'll be able to get information on what's happening, because I have a writer's blog, I have a chocolate travel blog where I am dialoguing some of my travels, and as well I have, you know, some other updates on that site. So
we will start to watch for Choco Latour by Doreen Pendrax, close to Christmas. Doreen, thank you for coming on the line and telling us about your exciting adventures, and we wish you the best of success with getting that book published.
Thank you so much.